Hello, everybody, and welcome to our March 2021 Empowered Self-Care Lab call. I'm super excited to have all of you here and to support you in wherever you need. Some of you already know the drill. If you have questions, comments you want to make, go ahead and type into or go to the participants and click on raise hand. We have here to support us as well as me. We have Lisa Filotti and Annette Falconet. And they are amazing, and they'll be jumping in. And periodically, I'll be taking a break from these calls, and they will take over for me. So they're going to get to know you, so that I don't just dump that on you, because sometimes I need a break. And I may actually go on a vacation sometime this year, which I didn't do at all last year. I guess everybody thought the whole year was a vacation. So we already have hands up, and the order they are: David, Sharon, Judy, and Karen. And then from there, if you have questions, you can put your hand up and we'll just take your questions. And what I usually like to start with is a celebration, and then go into where you need support. So David, you're up.
Good afternoon.
Good day.
Celebration is, I have kind of tipped upward from my cascade from the winter, and days are getting longer, and I'm more with it all day, and had the excitement of looking at a house, and unfortunately somebody else beat me to making an offer on it because the housing market's so hot. Just things are moving forward.
Good.
And a lot of clear thinking that I haven't had in a long time. So my question is, I look back at my test results over, because I put them in the spreadsheet that you very kindly provided, mm-hmm. So I can look over multiple years. And my testosterone and my free testosterone in blood serum seem to be falling. So the free testosterone is more significant. In 2017, it was 64. Then in 2019, it was 48. And in 2020, it's 28.
Okay.
And that's on a Quest scale.
Okay.
Not the scale in your spreadsheet. And the Quest scale is 35 to 155. So that last one is actually below their low level. That's the free testosterone. The serum testosterone isn't nearly so bad in that it stays within the Quest range. It goes from 832, 804, 682, 761 to 608. So it's kind of like 800 to 600.
Yeah, so it's definitely going down. When was the last time you did a Dutch test?
And that range is 25 to 1100.
When was the last time you did a Dutch?
250 to 1100. So my 608 is still well within the 200.
Still well within their range, but I mean, it's going in the wrong direction.
I don't know if free testosterone is like a test that really counts, in that maybe it just fluctuates anyway, but it's just because of that trend. And I'm about to get a bunch of Quest tests. My integrative doctor put in the typical ones, and then I sent her 2 dozen more to add on.
Sex hormone binding globulin, SBHG, sex hormone, SH.
Let me get this back.
He's not hearing me.
Okay, I can hear you now.
Okay, you can. The two that I would get, sex hormone binding globulin and estrogen, whatever they'll do, because you want to see if your testosterone is converting to estrogen. And with the free going down, there's a binding protein called sex hormone binding globulin. And if that one is going up, then it's going to hold on to the testosterone and not let it become unbound. But it looks like the general trend is it's all going down. So I'd want to make sure that there's the estrogens, right? You have to look at your estrogen. What do they do on blood? Estradiol and estrone, Lisa?
Estradiol. I would do
estradiol. Usually do estradiol.
Yeah. They will do total estrogen, but that's not going to give us the right. We would like to see estradiol.
Estradiol, yeah. If you do, I don't know, you did a Dutch test at some point. I don't remember.
A year and a half ago.
Okay.
And I'm planning on doing it again, so I could do it real soon.
Yeah. I would definitely do that to see what's going on and what the metabolites are. If you don't already have DHEA in your blood, you got to get that one as well.
I have that, and it was pretty flat. It was 140, 230, 200, 180 in a range of.
So it's up and down.
The okay. 300, yeah. Okay. But I've been supplementing DHEA. You told me a while back to quit doing half a dropper and just do two drops. So I do two drops per day.
And has the trend gone down too much or since then? Or
I don't have anything since then. So it was October of 20 where I had the last one.
Oh, this is the last one. Yeah. So I would get the DHEA. You may need larger amounts, but Lisa, anything else that you would add or Annette?
I was just thinking about pregnenolone. I mean, we'd have to look at the Dutch test. And I'm very leery about, testosterone supplementation, which
right.
I like to do because of it could aromatize into,
goes into estrogen.
Right. You really monitor your estrogen levels because in men, testosterone opposes estrogen or estrogen opposes testosterone. In women, it's progesterone and estrogen that.
And they convert. So testosterone, a lot of times when men have low testosterone and they just go in and they get testosterone supplementation, it actually doesn't help because it's all being what's called aromatized into the estrogen. So those are the things that I would make sure you have.
Okay. And okay. Is there any value to getting the tests really close in time, like even do them on the same day? I'm going to get the ION test, the Quest blood tests, and the Dutch test.
It's always good to do them in close proximity because then you can, you can compare things and see how things are going. I mean, when there's too much time between, you don't, get as good a point in time. So yeah, if you can get them all done at around the same time, it'd be great.
So even same day is better than like in the same week?
Same day is better than the same week, absolutely.
Okay. I'll see what I can do because the ION test, I have to have somebody come to the house to draw the blood because I don't think they do that at Quest.
I wish they would. I don't know. In years gone by, it varied based on state to state, whether they would just do it and charge you $20 for the phlebotomy, extra $20, but you can ask them. You can call them and say, hey, I'm coming in for these tests. And in addition, I have this other test and because they give you the vials and everything. So you can just ask them if they'll draw it for you there. And usually they'll charge you like $20 for phlebotomy.
The ION kit comes to me?
The ION kit would come to you, yeah.
Okay, so I have that ordered.
The ION kit would have like a stool and I don't know if the stool, no. It has a urine and it might have a blood spot. I don't remember which one has which, but I know it's blood and urine for sure.
Apparently it's a superset of the Nudivel that Genova acquired the ION test when they bought another company.
Metametrics.
Yeah.
Okay.
David, if you guys have any lab tests now, they will do the draw on the ION test because that's who did Samantha's.
Quest.
No, any lab test.
Any lab test now.
Oh.
Walk in.
Yeah, you can make an appointment or you can just walk in. And that's where she had hers drawn.
Good. That's good to know. And Jenny, I hope you're listening to that. So I don't know if you have an any lab test there because you were going to try to get that done at Quest when you go in with your NutriVal.
Where are you? Having a phlebotomist come to the house with masks on seems like a fairly safe thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 60. I might not look it. So I might be in the next batch of people allowed to get the vaccine. And so it's so close. I'm going to be ultra careful. Whereas other people, they're in lockdown fatigue. And still up in the air, I'm leaning toward getting the Johnson & Johnson one because it just kind of scares me that the RNA is producing lots and lots of the spikes off the coronavirus. And I heard that the spikes can traverse the brain barrier.
Well, one of my colleagues, she actually spoke at Shine last time, I think. Elisa Song, she's a pediatrician. She's about to do a webinar, like a workshop kind of thing on that. So as soon as I get her information, she's like really researched all the different vaccines and the pros, the cons, and all that kind of stuff, downsides, upsides, et cetera. So I'll make sure you get, I'll pass it on as soon as she has that set up.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. Thank you, David. All right. So next is Sharon. Hey, Sharon.
Hi. My good news, I happened to catch your talk that you did on oxalates. Mm-hmm. Actually, I try to get to all of your talks. And so, and that was an aha moment for me because I had been having problems with gas for months. And, you know, by later in the day, it was not pleasant. And, you know, it was a good thing we weren't going out and doing anything these days. But when you said, you know, this sometimes happens when people start your program because, you know, they incorporate all these greens and the nuts and everything. And so I cut those out and everything's fine.
Whoa. So you cut out all the high oxalate and you did it all at once or did you gradually do it?
I didn't cut out everything. I did read up on it. And, you know, it said like, don't do everything at once. And of course you had talked about oxalate dumping as well. And so in what I read, it said to just take out the couple of the highest ones first.
Yeah.
And that did it for me.
And if that's all it takes, that's good. Cause you know, going on an extremely low oxalate diet becomes kind of unhealthy for long term, right? Some people have to do it for pretty extreme at the beginning. But because, you know, you're taking out a lot of good food. So that's great. Yay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was really pleased. My question to you then is, what's a reasonable time to stay off of these high oxalate foods?
Yeah, so you basically, it's like any other elimination diet sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I would say a good month, you know, maybe 6 weeks. Then you just like pinch them up, right? You have... You know, if there's something you're missing, like spinach is really high. So but maybe just a little handful of spinach in your smoothie or leaves on something. And you want to test it this differently, the opposite of the way you test for food allergies. Whereas with food allergies, you're going, okay, just like bash it in there and see what happens. And, you know, eat it 3 times a day for 3 days. With this, you're trying to find your sweet spot, basically, your tolerance level of how much oxalate you can include. So what are you missing the most? Some people say chia seeds, I want chia seeds. So you have a tablespoon of chia seeds and you test it out and you just kind of work with it gradually.
Mm-hmm. Well, I took out the spinach and kale from my green smoothie in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I took out all the nuts.
Okay.
And I had been off it for about 3 weeks now. And just the other day, I had just made a new batch of your granola that you make with all the nuts and the mm-hmm. apple and everything. And so I had a bit one morning and that night I had problems again.
Okay. So with that, you know, that's probably a concentrated amount if you had you already tested. So the nuts seem to be an issue. I would go and test like kale. Kale's less than the spinach and just make yourself a sauteed kale dinner, but not with like make yourself sauteed vegetable dinner with a little bit of kale in it and see how it goes. You know that the dinosaur kale is much, much less oxalate. Yes. Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Than the I've other. Been eating that. I've been eating that. No problem.
No problem with that. So yeah. So you may not even need to add the other kale.
Okay. But I do need to wait more time because it's been about 3 weeks. So I should give it another.
I would give it. I mean, Lisa may have other ways that she does it or Annette, but I usually go 4 weeks or so, depending on the severity. And then just a little bit and try a little bit and try a little bit. Yeah.
Because when I tried the nuts, I did about 2 tablespoons.
2 tablespoons of nuts is a fair amount of nuts.
Yes.
Right? That's a lot of nuts. Like 2 tablespoons of kale is not that much, but 2 tablespoons of nuts is pretty concentrated. So I would choose one nut. Not all nuts are high in oxalates. So some of them, most of them are actually, but do you know about this app that Lisa told me about?
Yes. You mentioned it at one of the last calls and I did buy it.
Oh, good. It just makes it easy because you just go, okay, how much? Okay. And then you start to look at the amounts, right? Something like 50 to 150 is considered like a medium oxalate. Anything over 150 is very high and anything below 50 is low. So you can kind of play around with it and find your ideal amount, right? If you were to add up for those nuts, you know, it might have shot you up into the higher level range. Yeah.
What's missing on the oxalate chart that you printed off for us, it doesn't tell you the quantity. It just says the range. Whereas, you know, if you just had a small amount, you might be okay eating it. Whereas if
exactly.
you have more, it's that higher end.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to, these charts are hard to find. In fact, I have somebody, she just finished, I have to go through it, who updated the chart for me where the foods that were missing. But, and they're variable from one place to another in terms of like someone might say like avocado, right? Yeah. Avocado, many of them say you're fine. And then some of the charts say it's high.
Yeah.
So there's no exact science to this, unfortunately.
I did find one chart that said what the oxalates were for 100 grams.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the other thing. It's like when they tell you per 100 grams, well, maybe you live in Canada. Maybe you do measure things by 100 grams. But here we're like, what the hell is 100 gram? Like, I don't know what 100 grams is. And I think, oh, it's 3.5 ounces. Okay, 3.5 ounces of nuts is a lot of nuts. 3.5 ounces of vegetables is a little bitty portion, right? So those numbers are, it's very deceptive when you just look at the chart because you just, our brains want to see the amount that's in a normal serving. So yeah, it's challenging.
Anyway, thank you for that talk. And it has just been life-changing for me.
Yay, I'm glad to hear it. Lisa, did you have anything else you want to, I know you work with a lot of oxalate stuff.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that Sharon, the spinach and the almonds are probably the
highest,
you know, so those are the foods to really concentrate on reducing. And then of course, you know, preparation technique. So for nuts, we'll be dehydrating them or soaking them reduces oxalate content by about 30%. And the same with cooking foods. Yeah. And then of course we have to remember that oxalates are also not just coming from diet, from our diet, but also from yeast metabolism. So we have to think about, you know, do we have yeast overgrowth?
Right.
And then the other thing is, you know, do we have sufficient vitamin six status? Because B6 really helps us to process the oxalates.
Right.
So there are a couple other things to think about as well. Of course, the diet is where we need to start or look at it and right. become aware of it. But there are other things to factor in as well.
At the talk that Dr. Marie did, she gave a list of supplements that help, which was B6, the calcium citrate, magnesium citrate, potassium, iron, zinc. And so I am
adding that. And the thing with the magnesium and calcium citrate, you take that with the meal that has the oxalate. So as you're testing them, and it doesn't count towards your RDA, so to speak, like the amount that you're having, because it's going to latch onto the oxalates and get dragged out. So if you, it's like, say you need magnesium, which I know you do, right? And you add that to the meals that has oxalates, you don't take it away from the other part. You just add it because it's going to get sucked. Most of it will get sucked out of your body with the oxalates.
Okay. Typically I take calcium biglycinate. So should I only use the citrate then and not use the other?
You know, I don't know with the meals, the citrate tends to bind to the oxalates. I don't know about that particular form. And you do the calcium magnesium together. Some people just say to do the magnesium and some people just say to do the calcium. So I just say, do calcium magnesium citrate together. If it's a higher oxalate meal, do it in the range of 350 to 500 milligrams of each. That's the usual dose that I recommend. Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Lisa.
All right. So who's next? Oh, Judy.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hi.
So, sorry.
Oh, there you are.
My good news is that I'm finally okayed for the surgery that we started the wheels on back in November. I went into the gynecologist and they said, oh, you have a very, very thick uterine lining. And we want to do DNC and scrape things out and make sure there's nothing bad in there. And so then I had all these hoops to jump through. My primary care doc wouldn't okay me until I saw a cardiologist and a pulmonologist, which is not bad because then they did tests and we discovered I have atrial fibrillation, which is not good. But I finally got through all the hoops, the MRI, the tests, the whatever, and I'm scheduled for surgery in 2 weeks. And it's just a DNC, but given, and I've had one once before, but, you know, given I'm still very overweight and, you know, got all kinds of other issues, I'm wondering what I can do to manage the effects of having a surgery. And then I've got to think about the ongoing future, you know, God forbid they find anything.
Yeah. So I would say, first of all, what we want to do is go into a surgery with the idea that it's just going to be the right thing and they're not going to find anything. Because when you start to worry yourself, it creates more stress hormones, which makes for a slower recovery. So, you know, all the stuff that we've talked about before, right? The clean diet, off of gluten, vitamin C before the surgery, but not within 24 hours. And then after the surgery. So within 24 hours of the surgery, it's possible it'll interfere with anesthesia. So, or it's probably not a, it's probably local what they're doing, right? They're not going to put you
well, out. No, they're going to put me out.
Oh, they are. Okay. Yeah. So definitely DST, the vitamin C. Right. So you don't want to do, you don't want to do fatty acid, high dose fatty acids or vitamin C. I would say within, let's just say 48 hours, just to be safe. And then, but those are very important for afterwards, after the surgery's over.
Oh, I'm rotting.
Yeah. And then anything that supports collagen and protein. So if you have any, you know, like the Sun Warrior collagen protein or something like that, that you can help your body, give your body those things. Anti-inflammatory stuff, again, the after, turmeric and ginger. And what I did after my arm surgery years ago is I basically juiced ginger and turmeric and the vitamin C, and I made a drink, and I would just drink that, like, you know, every 3 hours or something throughout the days for the anti-inflammatory effects of that. You know, vitamin E sometimes, but they're not cutting. So that's, you know, they're going up vaginally probably.
Yeah.
So anything else? I can't think of anything else off the top of my head. You know, I think, trying to think. I know Lynn had put together a surgery. Arnica is really good for after surgery. Yeah. Arnica homeopathic, really good.
And maybe only had arnica as a topical thing for my.
Yeah, you can use it for topical stuff, but I would say arnica as a pellet, at the pellets or the liquid arnica.
Yeah, you can even put the pellets in the water and sip it all, you know, all day.
And sip it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you guys have anything more to add?
And that can be in addition to everything else you've said. It's not in place of.
It's not in place of. No, it's cumulative. Right. If you could see what I was doing, I had this, like, you would think I was a drug addict or something. I had everything in the world all around me, and I would muscle test myself to see what I needed at any given point in time. But beforehand, the kind of thing, if you are nervous about it, which is rightly so, I took, I think it was valerian. And I got the okay from the anesthesiologist, but I wasn't going under. I was just having local, that it was okay to do, they tell you nothing by mouth for 12 hours before, but he said no worries with putting a tincture under your tongue. So I did like valerian and chamomile and, you know, those calming kind of sedative kind of things. But you're going to be put out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I had this particular, you know, the DNC done before, but it's been at least 10 years ago and I had no problem whatsoever with it. But I think it's been a little bit unnerving that my primary care guy, wanted me to jump through all these hoops and then they found things. So it was like, oh, great.
Yeah. You know, here's my thing. And I mean this with lots of love. I think it's a wake up call for you. Right. Yeah. You know, you've known what you needed to do and you get started and then you get distracted, but this is your health. This is your life.
Yeah. Right.
And the changes that we've talked about that you worked with Lynn last year on in ERC, I mean, those are life-saving strategies. Those are the things that are going to, we don't have a this for that. We're not going to say, well, for AFib, you can take this and for DNC, you could take that. It's more the overall healthy balance of nutrients and supportive things and things that are anti-inflammatory. So if I were you, I would be on a gluten-free diet from now on. You know how to make your smoothies and make your green smoothies, get your nutrient levels up to speed, you know, get off of the, I don't know if you're still doing them, but I remember Pringles was one of your favorites. I
haven't had them in a little while.
Okay, good. Stay away from Pringles. They're like, they're total death food. So, you know, and then just keep yourself calm. Heart math, you know, getting yourself into that mode so that you can do that before you go through. Getting in that parasympathetic mode is going to make a huge difference in your healing. Okay.
Okie dokie.
Okay, you got it.
And you got to figure out when they're opening up California to on COVID vaccinations, and I do think I need to get that. But I got to figure out how and when to do it, and around dealing with surgery and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to open it up until the 15th, I think.
Yeah. So I can't give advice on that. But yeah. What I will say is just there's stressors on your body around surgery, right?
Yes.
So I wouldn't, if you're going to do it, I wouldn't do it too close to the surgery.
Right.
Because your body is weak at that point. Your body is weaker, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, and then you want to support your immune system, because one of the things they usually do, I told them I wasn't willing to do it. They want to put you on an IV antibiotic while they have you under to make sure you don't get an infection. And I said, no. And they said, well, you know, I say, I'll take my chances. I have my ways. And that's where the vitamin C and E and zinc and A and D that I up to those levels to support my immune system. And just being in a help, whether it's an outpatient care center or it's a hospital, you are still exposed to bacteria and viruses and all kinds of garbage that you normally wouldn't be exposed to. Right. Yeah. And so you want to make sure that you support yourself. Like I said, within the 24 to 48 hours, there's certain things that will thin the blood. So you don't do it right away, but you do until, right? You get your A up, you get your D up, you do zinc, you do vitamin C, and then you cut it, you do the surgery. And then within the 24 hours after, you go back and, you know, and then you work on your immune system and really supportive foods. Okay.
Okie dokie.
Right. Okay. What's the date of your surgery?
2 weeks from tomorrow. What's that? The 19th?
The 19th. Okay. We'll keep you in our prayers. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You got this. All right. Next is Karen. There she is.
Hi.
Hi.
So I haven't had tea in a long while because I used to drink green tea, but it contributed to my migraines. So I might pronounce it wrong. I'm starting the rooibos tea or whatever.
Rooibos. I don't know how to pronounce it.
I don't know either. So I started that. And then my doctor asked me to eat less eggs. So I'm doing that too. And then I always think I'm in graduate school. So I got Dr. Kine's book.
Whose is it? Her stuff is great.
And then I got this one too, which is motivational interviewing for nutrition and fitness. So, which is nice. So motivational interviewing, it's just a concept that social workers use to just kind of pull out people's values. So
very important.
And once you show them what they want and what they do doesn't match, that's where the motivation comes from. It's not you trying to shove yours down their throat.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my Weatherby blood book.
Good for you.
And I got my Weatherby other book.
Good for you. Yoo-hoo!
So there's my, I probably got other books.
Got books to read. Yay.
Yeah. So I just got my blood spot fatty acid back and my organics. So I, like, my doctor asked, because originally when I was in high school, I had food allergy testing and it said nuts, but obviously, like you said before, it's very vague in general. So I was trying not to have anything that would cause inflammation. So I switched over to sunflower seed butter. So, but my doctor's like, nope. Because he looked at it and he said, nope, take the sunflower butter out. I'm like, oh, okay. So
what was the reasoning behind that? Was it omega-6? Because it's too high in omega-6?
I mean, I can, if I put mine in the chat, can you see it?
You can share your screen. That would be better. But with the blood spot fatty, if you looked at the blood spot fatty acid and said no sunflower butter, it's probably because you are omega-6 dominant. Your omega-3s are lower, and the omega, it's like a 72-1 ratio in sunflower seeds.
Oh,
really not good.
I don't know. I mean, my threes looked okay, but my sixes seemed very low. But I mean, I don't know. Is there a, do you want me to share my screen?
And if you can share your screen, yeah. We can look at it real quick.
Yeah, let me see if I can do this correctly. See if I can.
And the other way to get good feedback, we can only do a quick feedback, and this is a public group versus a practitioner group. But I know some people like to see these tests and say, oh, that would be a good test for me. But on our next case study or our next NEPT call, and we can look at them.
Here, let me find it.
Okay.
For some reason, I'm having a hard time finding it. I thought I pulled it up, but I don't
see it. If you want, what I'll do is I'll move on to who's next, Stephanie. Oh, no, you got it. Okay. Yeah.
Let me just find my thing. Oops, I hit the wrong one. Hold on.
You're a collector of information.
Oh my God. If I didn't do that for graduate school, I would be lost.
It's good you're nice and organized. There you go. One spot. There it is.
Yeah, So I just did this in January.
For those who don't know, blood spot fatty acid tests just some basics of the omega 3 and 6 balance. And some of you already had them done. Oops, it's not opening.
Oh, it's open. You want me to scroll down? You can't see it?
No, I just see your I must have opened it in a new window because I'm only seeing your drive that has all the list of it.
Oh, because it says you are sharing your screen.
You are, but what I'm seeing is your So maybe you have to share differently.
Screen. Oh, hold on. Let me see. Let me try it again. That was weird. I don't know why I can't see it in this.
I'm going to give you a chance to get it all up, and then I'm going to move on to Stephanie so we don't run out of time, and then we'll come back.
Sure.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Stephanie.
Hi, Dr.
Green. Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you? Whoops.
I'm good.
Hand down.
Yeah, all right. So I'm celebrating. I'm getting ready to finally do my elimination diet.
Yay.
And yeah. And so originally when I was kind of getting it together, we had talked about, because my symptoms may be SIBO-like, you had mentioned going low on the sulfur and the FODMAPs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be on the right track, because although I haven't eliminated them, I've lowered them and I think I feel better. It seems to be better.
Right.
But I was curious, and you may have answered this already with, I think it was Sharon's question, but how long do I want to stay off of them? Is that the 4 to 6 weeks?
I would. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people go off FODMAPs for years. That's not really the idea, but the idea is like, as you're eliminating them to reduce the stress on the system, but you also need to be doing things to correct the underlying issues,
right?
Working on the leaky gut, working on, if it's a suspicious of SIBO, you want to be working on the motility, the migrating motor complex, really working on that motility. And there's things like Trafala.
Use Trafala and it doesn't seem to, like, I haven't noticed a difference with it.
And what about Modal Pro? There's a couple of different options. Modal Pro from Pure Encapsulations that has like ginger, it has 5-HTP. It could be, the thing about it is, if you've got sluggish transit, well, it could be a number of things with the SIBO. You want to make sure that you are doing the 4 to 5 hours between meals, because the migrating motor complex does not kick in until 4.5 hours after, or 3.5 hours after a meal. And if you're eating too close together, then things are just going to slow down and get stuck. So that's an important piece of it. Sympathetic, working on your sympathetic, parasympathetic balance is super important for that too. So anything that's going to affect the vagus nerve, I love the book, Access the Healing Power of the Vagus Nerve for ideas, but also stick the tongue depressor down and choke yourself, sing really loud, hum, coffee enema, all of those things will help to stimulate that vagus nerve to do more work.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I've been doing intermittent fasting because that feels good, but then that makes it hard to do 4 to 5 hours between meals. Cause I feel like I'm not eating enough, So I might.
When's your first meal? When do you start your first meal?
Usually it's early afternoon, so it'd be like one, maybe two in the afternoon.
So I would do two meals a day if that's the case, and maybe do the meal at one and another meal at six.
Okay, because I find that unless I eat a lot, I don't feel satisfied. So I feel like I'm overeating, you know, like it feels like I'm really expanding my stomach. That's the only thing. But I mean, I can kind of discipline myself, I think, especially if I'm doing the elimination diet and I'm sort of on that track. Right. Then I might just limit it and just.
Do you lose weight when you don't eat frequently enough?
Like I find like one of the things is sometimes I think I eat too much, but I don't really gain weight. So I think it kind of, that's one of the things. I'm not sure if I'm eating too much because if I don't eat, I'm not satisfied. If I do eat, I feel overfull, but my weight, you know, I mean, it fluctuates within, you know, 5 pounds, but I mean, I don't gain a lot of weight.
It could be that your body, once you eat, you need more and maybe you're not eating enough calories. And if you're eating too fast, if you're not stopping between the meal, the bites and chewing to get the satiation, the hypothalamus needs to go, oh yeah, there's food there. Let's take care of this. and then it could be because the organism's in the upper, in the small intestine versus where they should be in the large intestine. So the combination, if you go on to the Empowered site where the grant program is, there's a section, I think it's might be module 3 or 4 in there that has a whole section on SIBO. So you may want to look at that.
I'll go into that. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I just had one other thing because I need to eliminate nuts and I think seeds too, because I'm suspicious about all of it. So that leaves me with a pretty limited diet. Like for fats, I pretty much have olive oil and maybe coconut. I tolerate the coconut, which is not a heck of a lot. So I'm thinking about what's allowed. There's certain things that are, I'm watching my blood sugar. So certain things like, you know, rice is allowed and squash is allowed and, you know, melon is allowed. And those things aren't going to be great for my blood sugar, but I'm wondering if I need to include those. So just to make sure I'm satiated. So I'm just curious how concerned should I be about the blood sugar while I'm doing the elimination?
Yeah. Diet? So what makes you think you don't tolerate the nuts?
because I get a lot of gas and bloating.
From all of them or just some of them?
Well, that's what I want to figure out with the elimination diet. I know I tend to eat almonds and cashews. And like, I can't, like, once I start, I want to eat a lot.
And almonds have very high oxalate too. Cashews are pretty moderate, but, and you might have some overgrowth, right? Some yeast overgrowth or something along those lines. So I would look at, if you do the full elimination, take those foods that you just mentioned, the starchy foods, cook them, put them in the fridge, let them sit 24 hours to turn into resistant starch. And for the most part, you may not get it. The other option is to ferment those foods. So Steph Jackson teaches how to make coconut yogurt. I make that, but sweet potato yogurt, squash yogurt, those sorts of things. So you can actually ferment those foods. And So if you check her out at the Friendly Flora Collective, she has a lot of great recipes in there for those kind of things. And so if you ferment and then you turn them into resistant starch, I know a lot of people are very sensitive blood sugar wise and those things don't hurt it. And if the blood sugar is up a little bit, you know, while you're working on the elimination diet, I wouldn't worry about it too much. If it shoots way up to like, you know, 150s, 180s, whatever, I wouldn't worry. I would definitely be careful with that.
Okay. Yeah, I can watch that. And then if the seeds, like if I can start introducing chia and that's okay, then I can eliminate the other stuff. I was just concerned in the beginning when
it's very limited. Yeah. And that's why, you know, you've done fasting and you do fine with fasting. And then when you eat, you start to have problems, right? So it's really a matter of systematically reintroducing, like getting to the point where you have a bunch of foods you can eat. And so you're not starving because you fasting is not a long-term solution. It's a short-term solution, but not a long-term solution.
Okay. Yeah,
exactly. Lisa, okay, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I just that, you know, I don't know if you're on a plant-based or animal-based diet, but having some sufficient protein is also important. So whatever proteins you can tolerate. And of course, avocados are great fat, but if they're higher in FODMAPs or something, then can you tolerate avocados? Because also trying to figure out, you know, what foods you can tolerate instead of just cutting everything out. You know.
Right, exactly. Because I think to figure it all out, because I'm not sure, because I get so bloated over everything. it's hard for me to know exactly. And I suspect avocados may be okay. So that's probably one of the first things I'll try introducing back in, but I don't know for sure. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause if you tolerate olives, olive oil, then it's not the nuts. It's not about the fat, right? That's why I was thinking it was a fat intolerance, but if you tolerate the fats, but not the nuts, then there's something in there, and it could be oxalates, right? It could be just like, go for the lowest, what's lowest oxalate of those seeds? I think it might be pumpkin. I can't remember, but I think pumpkin might be the lowest of those. And nut-wise, almost all the nuts are high, except for, well, coconut, which isn't technically a tree nut. Yeah, so it could be oxalates are part of that as well.
Yeah, I figure it's going to be a lot of detective work. So this could take a while. That's why I want to make sure that I can get myself to a base
that you cannot waste that I can live on. Exactly.
Yeah, and then I can play, and then I can,
you
play,
can
with
play
things.
Around with it. But try the resistant starch concept and try the fermented starchy foods. Okay.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, we're back to Karen. Do you have a test?
Yeah, I think I know how to do it now. So
okay, good.
Okay, so can you see that?
It's where, yeah.
Okay, so
your EPA is super low. Yep. I like to see that up here, which says to me, since your ALA is good, that you're not converting well. So your delta 60 saturase enzyme, which has cofactors of various Bs and stuff. And we have pictures of that. Where do you see it? You'll see it in... you're in module one in NEPT. You'll see it in the Empowered site though. If you go down on the page, that's the nutrition lab, and you go to the section that says eating for nutrient balance, there's one on fats. And then there's another one somewhere in there on inflammation. So do the fats piece and you'll see what all the cofactors are. You want to boost those up. Do you take any EPA or DHA?
Well, I mentioned that to you the other day. So when I got food allergy tested when I was in high school, I was told not to have seafood, and my one reaction was so high that I'm supposed to carry an EpiPen with me, which I don't. So I was trying to get the EPA DHE without, you know, the plant form and not.
Right. The algae form. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, without corn or soy. So the only one that I could find was the Dr. Furman one. I didn't get it yet. They just emailed me a couple minutes ago before this that everything's okay, so that I can actually make an order. I just have to physically call them to do it.
Okay, so watch with that one, because your DHA is good, your EPA is low, and I think that one is, that's why I asked if you were just taking any DHA.
No, none.
So the DHA is there. Do you eat a lot of algae, or you don't eat fish because you got tested that way? Do you eat algae?
No, I don't know. I mean, I used to take spirulina. I don't know if that's considered algae, but that I don't anymore. I haven't for years.
Okay. So the EPA is what you want to, so look at his to see what the ratio between EPA and DHA is, because I thought his was higher in DHA than EPA. So, you know, I'm not 100% sure. Now, if you had a seafood allergy, you're usually, the allergy is to the protein constituents in the food, not the fat.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be just fine on like a Nordic Naturals Omega. They have one that's higher in EPA and lower in DHA.
Well, right. So when I was younger, I didn't know that there was, so I took a food supplement. I took A and D as a precursor. And then I took the other, I'm trying to think, or maybe I was doing A and D or something. But then I didn't realize, I looked on it and said it was fish oils. I didn't even know that, you know, I was so young, I didn't know anything. And I remember I was at work and I literally got hives all over my back. So I'm not sure if
not sure about that.
Yeah, I don't think I can.
Be careful.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I can handle, because the one time my throat did close up, I didn't know there was anchovies in Caesar salad dressing. And so that was no.
Yeah. And that's because usually those kind of anaphylactic reactions are to the proteins, not the fats.
Oh.
So, you know, get the this one and see how it goes, but also focus on, look up the delta 60 saturase enzyme and what the cofactors are. So make sure your Bs and your zinc and your C and all that kind of stuff is good.
Okay.
Okay. These are too high. You are. That's why your doctor said not to take sunflower seed. Look at your LA. It's way high, okay? So you need to balance your omega-3s and sixes. And again, in that fats section, we talk about getting the balance right. We have a spreadsheet in there that you can use, but also you can go to Chronometer. And this, I would cut back on your omega-6s for sure. Your GLA is high. Are you taking any borage oil or GLA type supplement?
I used to, because I have the keratosis pilaris, because I have that gene that doesn't convert the, the beta carotene to vitamin A. And my dermatologist told me to take the borage, and I was on it for years. Decades, I should say. And then I haven't taken it for probably 5 or 6, maybe 7 years. So I don't
time. Yes, I'm not taking it. The things that are higher in GLA that you would be eating, because people don't go around eating borage leaves, very often. But hemp seeds are fairly high in GLA. They're a decent source, not super high. So if you're taking hemp seeds, but that's unusual if you're not. I usually don't see those levels that high. I'll see an LA high because that's the food source, but usually don't see the GLAH, all of these high unless you're taking, like GLA would be borage or evening primrose or black currant.
I haven't been on them.
AA is found in arachidonic acid is found in a lot of the animal products, so other than fish, so meat, chicken, dairy, eggs. So that might be why I would cut out the eggs with this AA that high, and then go really light on any kind of animal products other than fish. But you can eat fish, so go light on your animal products because that'll shoot the AA up. Your trans are good, so that's good. But this is interesting. So this might come down if you adjust the diet and really focus on your omega-3s rather than sixes. Lisa, Annette, any other comments on that?
Well, it's just that arachidonic acid being so high, you're just really pushing the inflammatory pathways. So you really have got to push now the omega-3s. Your omega-3
right,
is really dominant.
Right.
And that's just setting your body up for inflammation.
Yep. Very inflammatory. If we look at the ratio, you're probably off the chart. Scroll up a little bit so I can see the ratios, the AA-EPA ratio. Keep going. There you go. AA EPA is there. Oh God. Yeah. You are in an inflammatory situation biochemically. And so you need to get your arachidonic acid way down. You need to get your EPA way up. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm hoping that it will work with the algae oil, the Firmin one, there's others, but you might need a fish oil to get that up. Yeah. Lisa, Renette, any other comments on that? That's what I've seen.
Yeah,
it's really high, 35.5. You're much more, your inflammation is rampant.
Yeah, you just really have to, because you're just pushing, the thing is that arachidonic acid is the starting point for the creation of PGE2, which is the pro-inflammatory eicosanoid, just to, studying NEPT. And so we don't want to be pushing that pathway, right? And that's what you're doing. And so we need to now focus on the EPA. EPA makes the anti-inflammatory PGE1. So that's what you've got to biochemically make a shift.
Shift, right.
Right. It's funny because back in 2012, I did my first antifungal diet for several months. And I had the worst fish cravings I had in my entire life. I'm like, so I just thought it was detoxing any fish that was left over, but I don't know.
Push these pathways. And you may have, look in your genetics for FADS.
Yeah, I have my book here.
That one, yeah. Well, we don't have to go into all that, but look at that one, the FADS, because that's related to the inflammatory and the conversions.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
You need to get this up. You're too young to have. I would expect you to be like this, 75-year-old with gulp. No, you're too young to have this be a problem. You got to get this under control. And it switches quickly. I have had people with this number go down to 5 within a few months of the right supplementation. So, and then the foods. So staying away from the arachidonic rich foods, go through that stuff in the Empowered on that page. I have a video. It's the anti-inflammatory thing. It shows you the pathways, probably more intense than most people want to see, but you guys are all geeks that come to this program. So it's good that you like to do that. So, okay, good luck with that and keep us posted.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, I think Rob is next. Yes, Rob is next. Rob and then Kim.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I just have a couple questions.
Okay.
I guess my celebration is I have completed the vitamin C calibration twice. And I call it a celebration because I've been putting that off for months.
I don't blame you. It's not the most comfortable process.
It turned out not to be that bad. I thought it was good. But you know, the first calibration was, you know, I used 22.5 grams, which is pretty high. But my first question is, it says in the notes to take 3/4 of that amount every day between flushes. Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that the first one or the second one? Were they both the same?
No. The second one, it came down to 18 grams.
Good. That's good. Yeah. So you just take 75% of that. You take it. It's a decent dose. So you either take it in 3 or 4 divided doses, or you put it in your jar and you put the whole amount in your full supply of water and you drink it throughout the day that way, because in your steady state, giving your body the vitamin C it needs.
Okay.
And if you start to before you do it again, if you start to get loose stools from it, then you can back off a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now how many weeks do I do this? Do I keep it up until it comes down to normal level?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Some people have to keep up. I remember meeting a Dr. Cathcart. I've recently read some of his papers, but back in the day when I was first starting out and I met him at a conference and he was telling me how, you know, he'd read Linus Pauling's work and how he had gone from being allopathic into functional and how he went and did this vitamin C thing to see how much he needed. And he needed 60 grams. Wow. That's what he needed to take every day was 60 grams of vitamin C. Can you imagine? But he said the beauty of it, he did it because he was getting colds, you know, frequent sinus infections and things like that. He didn't realize that it was going to help his allergies. So his allergies went completely away. But he said that after a while, every time he tried to back off, if he got below 58, the allergies came back. Right. So I don't know if this lasted forever and ever and ever. This was like 25 years ago when I spoke to him. But the thing is, we all have different levels. Now, if you look at your genes, and if you have the genetic detoxification towards the back, look at the vitamin C. If you've got red SNPs in vitamin C, you just may need more than the average person. Right. And you've had some heart circulation type things, and that's important for it. So you basically keep up on that dose. So what's 75% of 18 is probably, you know, around 14 or something like that. So you go with your 14. And if you start to go, whoa, what's going on with my bowels? My bowels are getting looser. Then you can drop it down to 12 and see if it, and then stay there. But you just keep dropping it down till you find your ongoing. What happens with vitamin C and zinc and other things that are so important for the immune system is that your level, your doses change, your ideal doses. Like you're exposed to your neighbor who just coughed on you and how you're breathing in their influenza, whatever, that's going to cause your body to need more. And so you just kind of, you know, you want to adapt and be taking the right amount for you.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I have one more question. It's a different subject. Last meeting, we talked about me taking I'm getting ready to get my blood test done. And we talked last month about taking the advanced lipid panel.
Lipid panel.
Yeah. So how is that different than just the regular lipid panel?
Oh, night and day. The regular lipid panel just has total cholesterol, HDL, calculated LDL. So they just calculate it. It's not even really measured. And triglycerides, and that's it, right? The advanced lipid panel takes each of those and goes into the subfractions of it. It'll tell you the size of the particles of LDL. It's actually measured LDL. And if you have large buoyant particles and high LDL, it's not as bad as if you have those small dense ones that are more likely to cause clotting. And it gives you lipoprotein status, so particular one, lipoprotein A, which is a risk factor. It has a lot of stuff. Yeah, it's well worth it. It's not that expensive. I think it's $175 or so on the your lab works. So if you just go out to that runmylabs.com, you'll see it listed there.
Okay,
perfect. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Unless your doctor will run it for you. Quest and LabCorp both do it.
Okay.
Quest one is called Cardio IQ, I think it's called.
They call it Cardio IQ. Is that the Quest version of it?
Yeah.
And I think the other one is NMR or something. And then Cleveland Clinic also does it. There's a lot of labs that do it. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you. Kim.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hi.
All right. I have two questions.
What's your celebration first? You have one?
Oh, yes, I have one. I almost forgot. I'm glad you asked me. My celebration is I've been able to find a sweet spot for having my bowels move longer than 3 days. So
yeah. That's a good one.
I know it without little work. It's about 1400 milligrams of magnesium citrate at night. So seems to do it. It's been working for about a week now. So
good.
Yeah. Yay. Really easy. So I'm happy about that.
Awesome.
I just kept going up one at a time until
little by little, right?
Yep. Okay. So my first one is on my Dutch results. So, but it's not really on the Dutch results. It's that, okay, I'm under methylating, you know, on the second page when it has the estrogens and then it goes over to the left with the CMOT and it's got like the 2-methyl E1, you know what I'm talking about?
The methylation gauge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I can share my screen if I need to, if it would help. I think, is Dr. Rita Marie frozen?
Yeah, she looks frozen. I think she's frozen. None of us are frozen. I think it must be her internet connection.
Well, Lisa, do you want me to just keep going since you're
just go ahead, ask your question.
So when I talk to my doctor, she said that she thinks I need B vitamins and that I need the methylated kind of B vitamins. And she recommended Metagenics, but they were pills. So I didn't get them there. I wanted to wait and talk to you all because Dr. Rita Marie has said, let me stop there. So my MTHFR, I have 2 yellow genes on that. But the CMOT, I have 2 reds. And so I've been real confused on if I should do methylated vitamins or not.
Dr. Vidmarie's back. I don't know if she wants to comment.
Okay.
Good. You can go ahead and answer that if you want to, Lisa. I missed a little bit of it, but I got bumped out. So
she's under methylating on the methylation gauge, and she's asking whether she should take methylated nutrients.
Not with red COMTs.
No. No.
Okay.
No. I would be very cautious about methyl nutrients.
Okay. That's what I thought. So I did right because I was like, I don't think I'm supposed to take methylated.
At some point I would say, you know, you start with the non-methylated forms, you can get a liposomal liquid methylated form, and then you just do drop doses, very carefully watching that you don't start to feel agitated, anxious, that sort of stuff. Some people can, don't get me wrong. I mean, some people with homozygous COMTs can do it, but it's not worth just like, oh, here, just take it. I've seen devastating results with that. Like people just go homicidal.
And so my bigger question, I think, is what's the best way to get methylation in a better position? Is it to, because my B12 is always low. If I'm not getting the B12 shot, my B12 is low.
What kind of B12 shot are they giving you?
Oh, I don't know. Asked. It was just the one at Kaiser, but I haven't gotten another one because my B12
probably cyano, wouldn't you guess?
Yeah,
probably. So, and that was another one thing I want to ask, should I get another shot or not? Because now it's back down to 312 again. So maybe I shouldn't get one.
What's your MCV? MCV and homocysteine I would look at.
Is 88.6.
MCV is 88.6. Okay, what's your iron? Do you know what your iron is?
They didn't check my iron this last
ferritin.
Ferritin, yeah, they checked ferritin. Oh, I wrote all this down for you because I knew you would ask.
I think it's criminal when they don't test iron and ferritin because it's, but ferritin. I can get an idea. As long as that's, if you
have iron. Okay, so Ferritin was, ferritin was 24, but now back in November, but now ferritin, I think, is like 15 or 16.
Yeah. So, the reason I ask, 88.6 is a perfectly great normal MCV, which would not suggest that you have a problem with B12, except if you have low iron, it's going to bring that down, right? So you're at 88. If your iron was brought up, those blood cells might get bigger, and that might be in the 90s, which could indicate. So what about homocysteine?
Okay, homocysteine.
Thing I would look at actually is MMA on your methylmalonic acid on your Dutch test.
Okay. My homocysteine is 9.7. In November, it was 8.6.
It's going up. Yeah.
And my, you asked about ferritin.
Don't worry about that. I got enough. I just wanted to make some connections there. I think that, the other one to look at is on your Dutch, the MMA, methylmalonic acid. Because it sounds like you're given that your homocysteine is up there and it's gone up, that is a good chance that the B12 serum is reflective of that. You don't have enough. I'm just trying to pull all these functional markers for B12 together to see what kind of pattern it's telling me. And,
Dr. Riri, let me tell you one other thing about this, because in November, my BUN was 8 and my creatinine was 0.66. My iron serum was 43, ferritin was 24.
Yeah.
You told me to take Yellow Doc.
Yes.
And for 6 to 8 weeks, which I did. And now my BUN is 16. So it doubled, but my creatinine stayed the same. It's 0.65. The ferritin is 33. And the iron, they did not retest it. I thought they did, but they didn't.
Okay. So I wouldn't stop with the creatinine. I was saying retest it. I mean, the Yellow Doc.
Yellow Doc. Okay.
When I said 6 weeks, it was like you could take it for 6 weeks and then retest your iron to see if it's moving in the right direction. Okay. Right. But don't just stop it. The Yellow Doc is good for all of your minerals. It helps to support the mineral status, the uptake, the hydrochloric acid production, your liver. So it's a good herb to take. I would just didn't want you to take too much and have your iron go too high. Right.
So I still need to get my iron checks because I still don't know what it is.
Yeah. So I would say you probably could continue. The ferritin is okay at 33, 33 to 40, it's fine. So it may be that your iron did pop up and is fine. But going back to the B12.
Yeah.
So with that pattern of MTHFR and the COMT, I generally recommend that people not do the methyl forms, at least initially. Okay. Get your B12 status up by doing like a hydroxy or adenosyl. Which one? I look at the genes again. If you have an MMAB gene, then I'm more likely to go with the adenosyl because they're
gene?
MMAB. It's in the same methylation section.
Okay.
With the B12 methylation.
If it's like yellow or red, then you go with the adenosyl?
I would go with the adenosyl. You can go adenosyl and hydroxy, the combination. And you just see what happens to these other B12 markers. Does it balance out your homocysteine? Right, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And then, of course, bringing up the serum B12, it should do that. Okay. Now, as far as the methylation, there's other things. I mean, without sitting here and doing a full genetic analysis, I don't remember off the top of my head some of that stuff. But, we always look at, okay, given different situations, where is that? But Lisa, do you still have more calls with Lisa coming up, maybe we can look at that and just see.
And that's my question, I guess, for Lisa is, my doctor was like, really like, oh, you got to take this methyl blah. And I was like, no, I don't think I should. And, but should I try Lisa, do you think I should try the adenosyl B12 now or wait?
Yeah, you can try it now. Try the adenosyl now. That's the safest form for you, adenosyl or hydroxyl.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's really the safest form. And of course, look at, I'll have to look back at your Dutch test to look at your B6 need. So Okay. Homocysteine is a non-specific marker, right? It tells us about B12, folate, B6. But we've got to be really cautious. Doctors don't really understand the nuance about using methylated nutrients.
They don't.
They know that methylation is important, and they know that methylated nutrients are the most bioavailable, but they don't understand, or maybe they haven't looked at the nuances there.
Yeah.
And so that's why they not normally just recommend that. So it's not, you know, and it's not our job to really educate them. So you can just hear what they have to say.
Well, you're very educated. This is why I believe that this program is so invaluable for you guys, because you are empowered to be able to hear when your doctor says, no, I don't think that's right.
Yeah.
Right? They're just not educated in this.
And I couldn't put all the pieces together because she said, all you need to worry about is your MTHFR, which I knew I was only two yellows on that. But I was like, no, there's something else. I couldn't remember what it was. I was like, no, I just know that's not for me. I have to wait. So I didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad that you did. And that's what I want all of you to be empowered to do, is to question that, because they don't learn this stuff. And if they do, they learn about MTHFR and they go, oh, let's just test MTHFR. Oh, we're getting into genetics now. I want you to take, I've had people on 15 grams of or milligrams of folate and vitamin B12. And she's like, I can't take this stuff anymore. I just get so agitated. I get so anxious. And I'm looking at her genes. I'm like, you have to look at the whole picture, right? It's really important. Yeah.
And they also wanted me to test it in my blood and pay $150 for the MTHFR. And I was like, no, I got that 23andMe. And then I put it on a system online. No, I already have that. Like, it's
done. You don't need it, right? They're going to double check that. Yeah.
But what's a good brand for the B12 adenosyl?
I think Seeking Health has a good one. Do you know of others? Seeking Health is what I usually use.
And Pure Encapsulations, both have.
Okay. And I'm looking for a liquid.
I think liquid is best because, you know, you can titrate the dose. Yeah.
Pure Encapsulations has a liquid. It's a combo hydroxyadenosyl.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you so much. That's really helpful. And I'll go back on the yellow doc.
Perfect. All right.
Thanks.
And then get the iron tested within, like, go back on the yellow doc, and then within 6 weeks to 2 months, get the iron tested again. It's like $35 if you have to pay for it, $25, something like that, if you have to pay for it out of pocket.
Okay.
Not a big deal.
Okay.
And then we're going to go to Fatima. And then we have, I want to always ask you, am I saying it right? Yes, Fatima. Okay. And then I saw that Aralee was posting something about, and I wanted, you know, after we talk to you, we'll addressing the, this is something new to me that's made from mold. Citrates are made from mold. So I want to have her explain that. So go for it.
All right. Okay. So what am I celebrating? Is that the first question we answer? So many things have happened since the last time I saw you. I've always working around this time of day and never got to join the call in a long time, but here I am.
Hey,
yeah. So I had my one-on-one coaching with Lisa. It was very educational. I learned, first of all, we went over my blood chem, the Dutch test that I had, and the complete thyroid test.
Nice.
The complete thyroid test, I thought was a complete thyroid test, was missing the, total T and reverse T.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't get to look into that because of those missing markers. And then let me see now. So from the coaching, I got all the vitamins Lisa suggested to take. I bought them. I've started supplementing on them, vitamin C, and they're all liquid form, liposomal, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So I've started on vitamin C, A, E. No, I don't have E yet. I thought I bought E, but I didn't. My glutathione, I needed, as indicated by my Dutch test, I bought it, but unfortunately, I haven't taken it because I'm not sure if to. Later when I logged into WellEvate, it said that it needed to be shipped overnight. So it was, I bought it, I think the 20th, it was shipped on the 21st. And I think due to the weather, it arrived on the 27th. So I don't know what.
Honey, it's cold enough. It's winter. Yeah, don't worry about it. If it was summer, I would say, well, let's be concerned. But it didn't. Yeah, no problem.
Okay, yeah. Great. Okay, so I'll start taking that. But I'm feeling great. Only thing is, I've noticed my appetite has increased. I have cravings for carbs. And soon afterwards, when I eat, and unfortunately, I eat the packaged types of carbs. It's gluten-free. Nonetheless, it's still carbs. And I experience this fullness that I get a kind of dull pain on my side. I don't know why. This is the first time I'm feeling that. So I don't know.
On which side? You're pointing to your...
My right.
On your right. Okay. And is it around the back on the side?
Around the side and back towards my ribs area. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if I'm very full, but I thought a feeling of fullness should come from the stomach area, the middle, but it's not.
I mean, generally it would. I mean, it just depends if it's shortly after, if it's hours later. I mean, when I think about back here, I'm thinking kidneys, right? That's the area of your kidney.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, but I don't know.
Yeah. So, okay. So let me just start here with, you know, I'm just going to start with the basics.
Okay.
Let's not do packaged carbs. And if you're increasing, if you have an increased appetite, carbs will increase your appetite, especially packaged carbs, especially if it's like gluten-free millet crackers or whatever. It doesn't really satiate in a way that if you were to sit down and eat a bowl of millet, there's just so much millet you can sit down and eat. Mm-hmm. But how many millet crackers can you eat? Well, you can just keep scarfing away, right? And they don't turn off the appetite. Your blood sugar is going up. Mm-hmm. Leptin levels are probably out of balance. Insulin levels are going up. So I would avoid that. If you have a carb craving, make yourself a sweet potato, right? Have a nice big sweet potato with some coconut on it. Coconut oil or something, right? And that will fill you.
Yeah.
Right? And especially if you take those carbs and you cook them and you cut them into cubes, you stick them in a container and put them in the fridge and eat them 24 hours later, they're not going to start having those blood sugar spikes and you're going to have much better control of your appetite. So
good reminder. Yeah, good reminder, because I used to do sweet potatoes for snacks. So I'll definitely go back to that. So that's that. And then one question I had was, let me see, to test my pH. Lisa, remember? So you suggested I test my pH. I bought strips, I tested it, and I got a color like in the 7.6 and 8 range, the last, almost the last color on the range, on the chart.
And that was a urine test, or was that a saliva test?
Urine.
Okay. Yeah. So when your urine is that high, it usually means you're very acidic and your body's going into emergency buffering mode. So it's producing ammonia to try to bring the acidity back into a normal range.
Oh.
So that, you know, so people think, oh, I'm very alkaline. I'm just, you know, and in reality, it doesn't mean it. If you're that high, the 7.6 to 7.8. So, and was that first morning urine?
No, it wasn't.
It was middle of the day.
Middle of the day.
Well, it could be also then reflective of whatever you had at your last meal, right? And stress will make you more acidic, right? It just like it shoots your body into that mode. So I would say first thing in the morning is your best bet for testing your urine. And then see where it's at then, and then do the second morning urine and see what happens between the first and the second to see if it goes in other direction and jot those down. If you go onto the site, onto the nutrition lab page, there's a section in there on alkaline, eating alkaline diet, you know, balancing your alkalinity. So I would watch the little video there. There's a chart that you can download and you can just fill in your numbers and monitor it for several days so that you can, because I don't know about you, but if I measure my pH on Sunday and somebody asks me on Thursday what it was, I don't remember. It's just, you know, too much has happened between now and then, right? So you basically, anything you're trying to monitor, you create a chart. We have given you so many charts you can use, or you create your own little draw lines and write it down, right? And monitor that. And also monitor it in comparison with your food. So one of my favorite ways is to keep track of your food in Chronometer. They have this place where you can have what they call biomarkers, right? And you can put in pH and you can actually go back and see, well, wow, whenever I ate whatever on, you know, the day before, my pH was always much lower or higher or, you know, one or the other. And it gives you this really great way of monitoring how, what you eat, how you think, your stress levels, your sleep, all of that stuff affects your whole body. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good job. Yeah,
that sounds good. I'll do that. So one last thing real quickly, my 4-OH is proportionally higher. And so I can't remember, Lisa, now, what am I to do with that? And I think you were supposed to send me some readings on that.
Okay. Thanks for reminding me. Mm-hmm. The sulforaphane. So it's really important. Broccoli sprouts, broccoli. Mm-hmm. It's really important. Thank you for reminding me. And I will send you some foods that can help. We want to increase your 2-OHs and reduce the 4-OHs. So that's what the balance.
That's what that will do. I'm going to give you a place to go on the site. There's mm-hmm. everything you ever want to know about handouts is on that site. Okay. Yeah. So if you go into, there's a place on there that will talk about Green Cleanse is one of the places. And there's a place where it talks about foods that support detox and foods that enhance detox and foods that disrupt. In the enhance, there's a whole section of all kinds of things that are the same vegetables and stuff that Lisa's talking about that will support that.
Foods that support
enhance detox. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all probably right. In a couple of different places, but I know for sure it's there. Might be under the environment pillar as well. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. We have about 12 minutes. So I want to address what is, did you see what Arlie was
putting in? Arlie put some links in, but maybe she should just tell us about.
Yeah. Tell us what you're thinking and where you heard that it's made from mold. Yes, you could reheat the starches after you do that. So you put them in there and then you can just take your cut up pieces of whatever they are and you can put them in a soup and put in some greens and, or you could stir fry them or you could just heat them up. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't need to be cold, Lisa.
It
needs to be cold for 24 hours, yeah. Right? Uh-huh. It needs to have been 24 hours since you put them in. But then once you're done, that's my understanding, you can heat them up.
Okay.
Yeah. And it takes 24 hours for that conversion to happen. Aurelie, are you there?
I am.
Okay. So tell us what you're talking about.
Well, I don't have new information because I discovered this about 5 years ago when I was in the process of trying to manufacture something that was similar to Calm, and found out that the citric acid was mostly made in a lab and that it was made from Aspergillus niger. So I decided not to do it. And I did check into Natural Vitality and they do a separate process to take any excess mold out of there. But it's used a lot in a lot of pharmaceuticals and it's used as a preservative in a lot of foods. And people think it's citrus, but it isn't. I mean, it is also, citrus foods do have citric acid in them also, but what's being used commercially is not from anything citrus.
So let me just step in there with Aspergillus nigra is not the same as black mold. They're very different things. Aspergillus nigra is a fungus that is actually, it's a medium that's used to grow a lot of different vitamins and other things. It is not the black mold that we think about that's toxic that lives in our house, from my understanding. Lisa, maybe, or Annette, maybe you have a different understanding of that.
No, I've read what you've read.
Yeah, I agree what you said.
Yeah, so I would, you know, look at Aspergillus nigra and just read up about it. But some people are sensitive to all funguses or whatever, you know, but it's kind of like, you know, people use Saccharomyces boulardii. They can't take it because they have a sensitivity to it, which for some people it's very helpful. Okay. Wheaton had your hand up earlier.
She had to go.
Oh, because it was up and then it was up at the beginning and then it was down and then it was up again. So.
And then she said, thank you. And she had to go.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll catch her another time. All right, guys, we are at time. So thank you guys for being here. We have next month. Or is it this month, Lisa, that you're doing the, or is it
Tuesday,
next month?
On Tuesday.
On Tuesday. Okay. So Tuesday, you guys, Lisa is going to be talking about the organic acid test and what that means and when you might be wanting to do it. She's brilliant at that test. And that's going to be our health topic for Tuesday. So I'm excited about that. Yeah. And there's some of those organic acids are on the Dutch test as well. But yeah, she's going to do that. And then I'm going to be doing the March kitchen show. But in April, the kitchen show is with Karen Osborne. And she's going to be doing everything bone health, like all kinds of recipes related to strong bones. So I'm excited about that one too.
Dr. Rademacher, how do we get the link for Tuesday?
It should be sent to you in your inbox. But also, if you go onto the website where it says calls.
Mm-hmm. The next call is on the 16th. It goes from today to the
16th. I hope they didn't. I'm going in there right now.
Okay.
Are you looking under ERC or are you looking under general calls? Let's see.
ERC.
It may not be listed under the ERC specifically because it's a empowered self-care. So it might be listed. If you just hit calls, it'll show you all the calls that you have access to.
Well, that's what I thought I did.
Yeah, I think I did that as well. And that didn't show up.
Uh-oh.
Let me try it again. Oh, no, you're right. If I just hit calls, but don't hit ERC, I can see it.
Okay. Yeah. Calls. Okay. If you just hit calls, if you're in multiple programs and you just hit calls, you're going to be able to see everything that you have access to. Otherwise you can hit it by specific, but if you also go to Empowered Self-Care, it should be under there as well.
Okay. I'm glad I asked.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. I'm glad you did too. Plus you should get a reminder in the morning.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Oops, I'm not seeing it. Calls. Am I logged in? Oh, I'm not logged in. It logged me out. Anyway, guys, have a wonderful rest of the day. We'll see you on Tuesday then. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.